Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you. It's also especially nice to see Chaos sitting right in the front seat, because we kind of think of ourselves as Chaos right now in baseball. So thanks for coming and representing our team. Also great to see so many different organizations represented here today, so many states. I hear more than 40 states represented at this conference. And there's also some international attendees from Australia, and you have members in over 15 countries. So we thank you so much for coming to Baltimore, because the Baltimore Orioles, we're a baseball team, but we're incredibly bullish on Baltimore for a lot of different reasons. It's a beautiful city. There are so many interesting neighborhoods. So if you haven't had an opportunity, how many people, this is their first time in Baltimore? Awesome. If you haven't had an opportunity, I encourage you next time. You know, Inner Harbor is kind of what people know the most, but there's a lot of really interesting neighborhoods, a lot of really interesting people. And that's kind of what we're talking about today, is why it's important to being around different people, diversity in organizations, and in particular, women in leadership roles. I was speaking to Sig yesterday, and I understand you heard from Sig. He was awesome, right? Yeah. He's incredible. He's got a lot of information in that head. He also has just a lot of wisdom that he brings to our organization. And I think what he and Mike Elias and their team are doing is incredible. We're starting to see the fruits of that labor. And we appreciate all of those who have kind of watched this rebuild process. We're just really proud of our organization and what we're building. But Sig shared, I kind of asked him, I said, you know, this is a very different group of people that I'm typically used to speaking in front of. And I want to know, why do you think this is applicable to this group of people? And I thought it was really interesting what he said. Because analysts, at one point, were outsiders to baseball. It was foreign to have analysts in the clubhouse or in the front office. Very old school way of thinking, just straight baseball, people that had a lot of baseball knowledge, but not all the analytical skills that many of you bring to the table. Just like that, women have been sort of an outside force that has come into baseball. And I would probably suggest, I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but I don't think we think about that. I don't think about being a woman every day. I just think about doing my job. But, you know, it is a factor that there is definitely a lack of diversity across Major League Baseball. And it's something that not only that they're addressing at the very top of Major League Baseball, but organizationally, much like the way we're building our talent pipeline in our minor league organization, and Matt Blood, our director of player development, is here today. We are also building that same kind of pipeline for future diversity in our own organization. We're getting ready very soon to announce some initiatives that create pipelines for talent right here from Baltimore that will create diversity in the front office. And we're going to invest in organizations that are going to allow us to do that. So I'm very proud to share that with you, and that'll be announced very soon. But what we have here today are three individuals with an incredible amount of experience and wisdom, and they're going to bring you a little bit on the inside of our organization and their experience outside of our organization. But just to use a few words to describe them, 37 years of experience. Just one person on this panel has 37 years of experience, Lisa Tolson. A Harvard graduate, Eve Rosenbaum, in fact, a generational family of Harvard graduates. And Nicole, the second woman ever in Major League Baseball to be a head groundskeeper in all 30 teams of Major League Baseball. That's a really big deal. So I just want to, you know, open it up. I'm going to start asking a few questions, and then there's going to be a little bit of follow-up after, and then we will invite your questions if you have any. But if there's something that you're not hearing, feel free, step up. We're available for whatever. We're up to any challenge. So, Lisa, I'm going to start with you. Okay. You've worked in multiple capacities within the club for 37 years. Tell us a little bit about your journey. No, don't tell me about your journal.
I am not. So as Jennifer said, I started with the club back in 1985. When I was brought on, it was a time of transition when they used to sell the tickets, hard tickets that were pre-printed and sold in the box office, and they were bringing in computers, which you can imagine was very intimidating for many of the staff at the time. So they hired a group of us to come in, and we were trained on the computer system. So I worked in the box office when I first started with the club. A year and a half later, I was promoted to group sales liaison, which also was a brand new position in baseball. And what I would do is work with the salespeople who were out in the field, and they would call in, and I would find them seats for the group. I would be the point of contact then with the group leaders, and I would print the tickets, mail the tickets, bill for the tickets. So, and at that time, if you were with the Orioles, you did not just do your job. So after you would do your 9 to 5, you would then work will call, take tickets, whatever they needed you to do. So it was a very different time. About 5 years after that, I went to work for the VP of Finance, and I was doing a lot of benefit administration, and I learned a whole lot working in the accounting department about journal entries, about revenue, about all types of things within within the organization. So in 1994, Mr. Angelos brought in a director of HR. We had had a personnel department, but they didn't do all of the things that you can think of when you think of human resources. So I was moved from the accounting department to work with the director of human resources. And I can say at the time I was a little intimidated because I didn't know much about human resources. So I said, okay, this is an opportunity. And I was also married at the time and thinking of starting a family. So I'm like, what can I do to make sure that I'm ready for this challenge? So I went back to school and I took human resource classes. I was connected with the Society for Human Resource Managers, and I received my certification, which opened an opportunity for me when the director left. I was moved into that position. And then most recently, in May of 2019, I was promoted to Senior Vice President and now part of the senior leadership team.
It's remarkable. I mean, it really is. And when you think about, a lot of people ask, you know, how do I get into the Orioles or how do I get your job or what have you? Lisa started in the box office selling tickets. And I can tell you, because we work very collaboratively at the Orioles. We have a lot of superstars in our ticketing department, and you see them, and it's wonderful to be able to work with people across departments because you kind of get to know them and hope that their path will lead them to a place like Lisa Tolson, who is, in effect, managing the entire organization. All the human resources, by the way, that doesn't just encompass the hundreds and hundreds of employees that we have, and then the seasonal employees as well. It's player human resources, too. And in our organization, with a lot of transition during the rebuild, you can imagine, it's a great, great deal of work. And in today's landscape, today's environment, even more work, because it's a different workforce. So congratulations. It's amazing. 37
Thanks,
years. So for those of you who are, I'm a Star Wars person. So she's the Yoda, by the way, on here. But anyway, I'm gonna switch it over to Nicole, who's our groundbreaker. And, you know, we get to see Nicole every day. It's very interesting, actually, watching Nicole, because she's very high level, overseeing everything, but she's not afraid to get into the dirt, literally. I see her out there on the, you know, pregame with the hose, you know, getting everything ready and her team behind her and, you know, so many different challenging scenarios, such as rain delays. I'm looking at Greg Pater because he's our MLB scheduling contact. That's challenging because most teams don't want to give up a pitcher for a rain delay. And Nicole is also our resident weather person. So she's the one advising us all the time on our weather and what's coming and what to be prepared for. And when you look outside, just to give you kind of a glimpse on the inside, when you see the Baltimore weather report, which Baltimore weather changes very, very quickly, it's unbelievable. Right at the beginning of the day, Nicole starts sending reports, starts telling us we have to be prepared for this scenario. BP might be canceled or we might be, whatever is going to happen on field. we have meetings leading up to the game, and then, of course, if we start on time or if we're starting in a delay, then we're in game. So Nicole's job becomes much, much more complicated. And we're dealing oftentimes with very intense managers. Intense is a word to describe just about every manager. So very intense, like I said, starting pitchers or even relief pitchers in a scenario where you don't have that many people available to you. So I want to talk to Nicole a little bit about, you know, being as tough as you are and as also capable as you are. What led you to this?
Well, my path in the baseball kind of started with the science of how plants grow, and that's what I was always fascinated with. Growing up, I grew up in an urban area, so wasn't really around farms, but somehow I wanted to like learn how the plants grow, how do we get food to table, or, you know, farm to table. So I started taking classes in agriculture at the University of Delaware, and specifically there was a few classes of turfgrass science. And being a college athlete, you know, I worked on the field, I played on the field, I started understanding that, you know, turfgrass is an integral part of any sport, football, soccer, golf, baseball, softball. So that kind of led me into getting an internship with the Orioles with the head groundskeeper at the time in 2001. And I really started focusing on finishing my degree in agriculture with the background of turfgrass science. And then ended up working with the Orioles for 3 years, and then went into the minor leagues because I was told that in order to make it to the big leagues, you have to prove yourself at the minor league level. And I worked for the dreaded Yankees affiliate, the Trenton Thunder, and had a great time there. I feel like, I know, I see a lot of Yankee fans. I don't hate you. It's all right. Have a little love for you in my heart, but learned a lot there, and that's where I think I got a lot of experience. You know, when you go from major leagues where you have collectively 30 people on your crew to not having anybody on your crew in the minor leagues, you really get to see how the insides work and what you're capable of as a person. Like, can you do this job? Are you going to be able to succeed? But then you have only 30 job positions in Major League Baseball. So I thought to myself, there's no way in hell I'm ever going to get a spot back in the major leagues, but I'm going to try. And, you know, there were times where I thought, well, maybe I'll go to golf or maybe I'll do something else with agriculture. But somehow, some way, like the Orioles had a position open and, you know, one of the ladies, Linda Ashour, who worked for one of the director of operations at the time, reached out and said, hey, you should apply and, you know, come interview for the job. So I did, and I ended up back here with the Orioles, and this is my 17th season as head groundskeeper with the Orioles. So very excited.
How many of you haven't been to Camden Yards for a game yet?
Oh, you can't. Are you coming tonight? Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. We're probably going to have rain later. Just want to...
Hey. You're not supposed to say that.
It's okay. It's just a brief shower if it impacts us.
Well, watch. When you come to Camden Yards, the reason I bring that up, other than the fact that Camden Yards is absolutely beautiful, right. It's a beautiful ballpark, and I go to a lot of them, so I've seen a lot. And many of the great ones have been modeled after Camden Yards. It is the ballpark that forever changed baseball, as I'm sure you heard from Greg Bader. But this is Nicole and her team's handiwork. But if we do have showers, I would ask you to pay close attention to the activity. When you see the guys come out, guys and gals come out behind that tarp.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's intense. And also, there's a lot of YouTube videos, if for fun, you want to see great tarp pulling versus not so great. Yeah. I would say that in the Beltway area, ours is the number one.
Yes.
For sure. Possibly across all of Major League Baseball, but you'll see Nicole running across the field, you know, going to talk to the crew chief and the managers and, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody realizes how hard that is because you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to, you know, divulge all the rain information that you can and run back and, you know, it gets to you after a while because they want you to come out every half inning and it's just full on sprint.
Yeah, you're like the IT department.
Yeah.
When you're kind of coming out, it's bad news.
Yeah.
You know,
if you see me
nobody
run out
calls
with
the
an
IT
iPad.
Department for good news.
you see me run out there with an iPad, you know something's about to happen.
Yeah, things are about, I sit and I watch, I'm like, oh God, here comes Nicole. Yeah. This is bad.
Oh yeah, that was, that's another story. Yeah.
So it is very intense. So there's all the expectations that people have of a perfect field, and I think that in the years are all going together, but 2020, I think our first COVID year with no fans, we had spring training move to Baltimore. Oh, yeah. So spring training with, you know, way more players and prospects and whatever that we typically have in a Camden Yards environment. In Florida, in Sarasota, our operation has many fields. We have our spring training operation at Ed Smith Stadium, and then we have a satellite location at Twin Lakes that has another set of fields. So we have plenty of places. Well, we don't have that in Baltimore. And Nicole and her team also had to prepare the field for the transition, the constant transition of hundreds of players throughout the day. So just to kind of give you an idea.
Yeah, that was really challenging because, you know, a lot of people, when you come to the ballpark, it's gorgeous. You know, you have the warehouse, you have this beautiful grass, but you don't realize how much goes into taking care of that turf on a daily basis. And then you throw 60 guys that are practicing from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. on a daily basis for a month leading up to this COVID season. It really put, I mean, that was something that, like, I don't think anybody can prepare for because it's a living plant, you know, and eventually it's just going to wear out. It's going to take a lot of abuse. But then that also affects how the game is played. You have bigger divots. You have a chance of an injury happening without much notice. So, you know, when you have multi-million-dollar athletes from both teams that are playing on that field, it's a lot of pressure to keep that grass as healthy as possible, that dirt as playable as possible, because, you know, you have such an investment in those athletes. And that puts a lot of pressure on a grounds crew that's just trying their best to just make sure it stays healthy and alive for this unprecedented 2020 COVID season. Was not only the no fans, which was weird, they kept playing that loop of the fan noise.
That was,
I was like,
bad.
torture. Like, and the louder, I mean, it's when it's an empty ballpark and that PA system is running, it is loud. And yeah, I'm glad it's over.
Well, you've handled it very gracefully under the circumstances.
Thank you.
So speaking of superstar groundbreakers, I want you to meet a future general manager of a baseball team to be named later. So she's our, not cash considerations trade, but our PTBNL GM, which I can see her very concerningly checking her phone constantly because our GM, Mike Elias, who's incredible, likes to be constantly in communication with us, and we must be available at all times. And you can imagine during the trade deadline, we were afraid to take, literally afraid to take showers because things were happening. But I see Eve checking her phone. You know, an interesting path for sure. A lot of rich and interesting history, starting at the Harvard Crimson as a softball player, and then moving across multiple sports, and then here with the Orioles. So tell us a little bit about your path, Eve.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. So my path in baseball actually started when I was really young, just a little kid. My parents are huge baseball fans, and they always told me that I learned how to throw a ball before I learned how to walk. And it's true, there are all these photos of me when I'm a little kid, like running around my little Orioles gear. And I played baseball growing up. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., so a little bit down south. And I played baseball in the BCC League, so Bethesda Chevy Chase Little League, for anyone who's local and knows about that. So I played baseball growing up. I switched to play softball when I got to my freshman year in high school because at that point I basically stopped growing and all the guys were still growing. And it was a choice for me of being the starting catcher on the varsity softball team or going out and being on the JV baseball team. So I said, all right, I want to be on the varsity team. So I switched to play softball. And it was awesome. I love softball. In many ways, baseball has a lot to learn from softball because softball is incredibly fast-paced, and the game is like an hour and a half, seven innings. It does really, really well on TV. So there's a lot that baseball could actually learn from the sport of softball. So then I played softball in high school, and then I went to Harvard, like Jen mentioned, and I was a walk-on for the team there, actually. And so I caught for the Harvard Crimson, and while I was there is when I realized, okay, what am I going to do with my career? I think I want to do something in sports. I don't know exactly what it's going to be. And everyone said, you got to start with an internship, just the way, like they told you, Nicole, you have to start as in the minors and prove yourself. So I got an internship with the Red Sox. I think it was after my sophomore year. Yes, I got an internship with the Red Sox. It was just a general internship on the business side, selling tickets and giving ballpark tours. I worked a lot with the parking and the T, so like the subway up there for anyone from Boston, trying to get people to take the T and not drive because, you know, the traffic is so bad in Boston. Working on concerts, so I got to like hang out with Aerosmith. So, yeah, the things you do along the way. So from there, I then got an internship with Major League Baseball in their commissioner's office in the baseball operations department, and that was sort of my first foray into baseball ops.
And that was in New York, correct?
That was in New York, yeah, in New York City, where the commissioner's office, you know, it still is. And I worked for Kim Ng, of course, who's now the GM of the Marlins, and Peter Woodfork was there at the time. David Stearns, who's the president of baseball ops for the Brewers, was there at the time. So that was just a summer internship. And then from there, I went back for my senior year of college. And again, I still knew I wanted to work in sports. And I got into a program that the NFL, their commissioner's office, does. It's a rotational program. It's like a sort of like leadership executive training program for, you know, kids who are just out of school and don't know any better than to work 18 hours a day in New York City with, you know, making no money, right? So I did that, and I got to see a few different areas of sport, of the sports world there. I got to see club and labor finance, which is accounting and the CBA and revenue sharing. I got to see mobile app development, so designing apps. And then I eventually caught on there as a manager of business intelligence and optimization, which is doing all the analytics for mobile applications, you know, tracking everything that people do so we could then make the app better for users and then also find ways to drive money toward our sponsors. And then when I was there in New York City, that job was actually split between New York City and LA, because the NFL Network is out in LA. So I was going back and forth for that job. And while I was there, I got a Facebook message, which I never check Facebook, but I just happened to one day, and I got a Facebook message from one of the guys who I had interned for when I was at Major League Baseball, and he said, "Hey, Eve, I work for the Houston Astros. I am the director of international scouting there. I remember you from your intern days. You were really good. Do you want to come work for me?" And at first I was like, no, like, why am I going to move from New York City and LA to Houston, Texas? Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, these Astros fans up at the front are giving me stink eye.
All her exes lived in Texas. She was trying to kind of avoid it.
I'd actually only ever been, so I took the job because I realized this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get into baseball. I had only been to Texas once for a softball tournament, where we got like snowed in or something. I had to stay like the whole week. So I'd never really been there. And I know. I up and moved to Texas, to Houston, and I was there for 5 years. So I actually loved it there. I still love Houston. We're going back to play the Astros in a couple weeks. I'm thinking about going because I really miss the food in Houston. I would love to go back and get that. But I worked in international scouting. So my job at the time was, everyone knew about, you know, Moneyball and the analytics revolution in baseball. And it had sort of revolutionized pro scouting and pro player evaluation, all the transactions that happen in the majors and the minors. And then Mike and Sig, who, you know, I work for now, they had done a lot to reform the draft and make the draft more analytical. But international scouting hadn't really been touched yet. So that's what I was charged with, was introducing technology and just more robust decision-making processes in international scouting. So I was flying all over the world, mostly to the Dominican Republic, Mexico. You couldn't go to Venezuela. You still can't go to Venezuela because of their political situation. So those players would go to Colombia, Aruba, mostly Curacao, for workouts. So I was going all around there. And I was a scout, pretty much. But then I was also office-based and doing a lot of the analytical work and working with our R&D department with SIG and with our amateur department with Mike Elias to just come up with a better way to write reports and do these evaluations of these young 15, 16-year-old kids. So that's what I did for 5 years with the Astros. And then Mike got this job here in Baltimore, and I'm from here, and so it was like a dream come true for me to be able to come with him and come back home and work for the team here. So I got this job. It was right before the pandemic. It was November 2019. He brought me on as the director of baseball development, where basically my job was to connect all the departments within baseball ops. And Mike and Sig were building the baseball ops department from basically the ground up. And he wanted me to come in and make sure that I was working with Sig and his team of analysts and developers and make sure that all of this research they were doing, all these models they were building, were getting put into digital tools that then the rest of our organization could use. Like Matt Blood here, our farm director, he and I work super closely together making sure that he and his coaches and all of his players have the right information that they need to become better ball players. So I did that, and then I was constantly doing a lot, still with scouting and player evaluation, because that was a big part for us, was drafting well, starting an international scouting department, making good trades to really build up our farm system. So it took a lot of player evaluation work. And I did that for 2 years, and then Mike elevated me to assistant general manager of baseball operations earlier this summer. So now I still do a lot of the work that I was doing, but my focus now is on the day-to-day operations of running the major league team. So that's why I'm checking my phone all the time, because you never know when a transaction is going to come up or a player is going to get hurt or anything like that. So there you go.
So, yeah. All of that on about 4 hours of sleep, yep, on a good night. I can tell with 100% certainty that is the sleep schedule of Eve.
My phone went off at 6:03 this morning.
Yeah, and she went to bed at 1:30-ish.
1:30, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a regular day in baseball, and it is kind of interesting because people, I can't even tell you how many times when I tell people what I do, they're like, oh my gosh, that sounds like fun. I'm like, okay. I think going to the spa is fun. My dad didn't have boys. He taught me how to throw a spiral, which is kind of like your story, that, yeah, I was throwing spirals before doing anything else. Mm-hmm. That's fun. But this is hard work. And you can see, and I think what's really interesting, a lesson here, a lot of opportunities that were presented along the way of each person, and they took the opportunity. Despite the fact that I would imagine, I wasn't there, obviously, but in your mind, you think, I can't do that. I don't know if I can do that. But the opportunity was there, and they grabbed it. And there is also another lesson, and you should check your Facebook messages, even though most of them are very creepy.
Yeah.
On occasion, you may find a good one.
Yeah.
So, and that was an example of that, and we're grateful that you're here. And I want to kind of go back on one thing you said, and then we're going to go back around with some other questions, but Kim Ng, who was named the first female general manager of a Major League Baseball team, the Florida Marlins, I don't know, 2 years ago about. Yeah. And you worked,
mm-hmm,
for Kim.
Mm-hmm.
So what is something that you learned from her that has kind of helped you along the way?
Yeah. So I learned a bunch from Kim, and I was so fortunate to be able to get to intern for her. And actually on my last day of work or second to last day of work or something like that, I did like a little, you know, exit interview type thing where I sat down and talked to her, and I got to ask her advice for what I wanted to do in my baseball career. And I took notes, and it's on this little piece of paper that I have at home in my, you know, little one-bedroom apartment here in Baltimore, and it's in a safe. And this safe has that, my birth certificate, my World Series ring from the Astros, and that's about it. That's everything that's in my safe. But it includes this little piece of paper with the advice I got from Kim Ng. And some of the things that she told me I still use today, one was a big one, which is to write down what you see in terms of leadership qualities. So she said, so when you're running your own team one day, you know what you want to do because you've seen people do it well in the past, and what you don't want to do because you are reacting to something that went poorly in the past, someone who you worked for who did something wrong, and just things that you would want to change when I was in charge. So write that down. Also write down my opinions on players so I can always look back and know what did I get wrong, what did I get right, what can I change in my evaluations? Now, the thing about that is most of the time in baseball with your evaluations, you're wrong. Most players aren't going to make it. So you have to give yourself some slack because most times you're going to fall in love with this guy and he's just not going to make it because that's what the numbers say. But there's still things that you can learn, like what traits are always tripping you up or what you need to learn to appreciate more. Those are some things. And then just the way she carried herself, she was like cool as a cucumber. Like everything you see about her on TV where she just seems very composed. And there could be like a burning building behind her and she would be sitting here telling everyone very safely how to get out of the building. Like that's absolutely 100% how she carried herself. And so I do try to do that in baseball as well, because like we've all said, it can be very busy, it can be very hectic, there can be a lot going on, but you have to stay cool, calm, collected, and make the best decision.
Interesting. And you do have to be adaptable. Because if the one thing about baseball is that there's constant change. So if you're the type of person who doesn't like change, baseball is definitely not the field for you. But I'm gonna skip around a little bit just because of the time. But Lisa, you have all of this experience and you've seen so many different parts of the organization. And in addition to that, not only are you senior manager at our club, but you work across all clubs because Major League Baseball has a lot of collaborative opportunities for those in your position so that we can learn from each other. If I had a daughter, which I don't, but if I did, and you were going to give her some advice on how to break into baseball, professional sports in general, what would that advice be?
That's a really good question, Jennifer. And I do have a daughter, so I've given her many tips. She's not in baseball, but... So I think there are several things. Now is the time. If you're watching what's happening around sports, doors are opening for women. It's great to see. It's been a long time coming. The glass ceiling's being shattered right now. Major League Baseball has lots of opportunities. You'll see when I started in the mid-'80s, if you were a female and you worked in the front office, your title was either administrative assistant or general staff. I pulled up an old media guide and I could not believe it, but that was absolutely the truth. And it didn't matter if you were managing payroll. We had plenty of women in the organization and they were doing very important responsibilities. But you could be an administrative assistant, but what you would be called today would be director of baseball operations. This was the person working most closely with the general manager. So it was in the early 90s when it started to change a little bit, and you saw more directors and managers. And at the Orioles, we had one female director, and we had our first female vice president, who was Janet Marie Smith, who came in as the director of planning and development when we were moving to Camden Yards. And that was such an inspiration to see for all of us who were still there, and knowing that if we worked hard and we could get there. So now look at all of the opportunities. I pulled up a recent media guide, and you'll see two of us on the senior leadership team. You have Eve. Just look up here. I mean, what Nicole's done, what Eve's done, Jennifer. I mean, it's just amazing. So the opportunities are endless. But you have to get in the door. You have to work hard and take advantage of those opportunities that Jennifer was talking about. Each of us probably... took a chance and maybe took a job that we really didn't think we were qualified for, or maybe that a job that we thought, this isn't really what I want to do. I'm sure that Eve did not want to, be working as an intern in the ticketing department when she started, but look at her now.
Thank you. I do think it's interesting also to remember that there's always people that you're going to surround yourself with. And you should never surround yourself with people who tell you you can't do something or that you don't belong. And I can tell you, as a person who has very little baseball experience, my baseball experience has been entirely derived from the Orioles. There are a lot of people who thought that I didn't belong here. And I decided a long time ago, I don't have people and that like that in my life, and I don't listen to them. So I think that's applicable in all parts of life, but it's taking advantage of those opportunities. And if somebody else believes in you and believes that you can do the job, John Angelos, in my instance, in all of our instances, really, you got to take it. So I want to go to Nicole, back to Nicole. So Nicole is at the top of her field in a male-dominated industry and in a male-dominated sector of the industry, for sure. What's kind of been the recipe to your success?
I think that's kind of tough because, like, you know, grit, determination, but also, like, leading by example really has helped me. Like, you know, you can't just go out there and tell a crew of however many people you have to do something. You have to actually do it yourself and, like, show them that this is the way. This is, you know, you don't have to do it the same way that I do, but this is how we're going to do it. I think that's really been the meat and potatoes of my recipe, you know, just being out there leading by example, never leaving them alone to fail. And if they did fail in any of that, you know, to pick them back up and, like, encourage them to do better. I don't know.
And who's someone who's mentored you in your career?
Oh, I have a lot of mentors. Number one was just the person that really gave me a chance to succeed was our past Orioles head groundskeeper, Al Capitas. He was the first one that really took a chance on me to come and do an internship, which, you know, is really unheard of. You know, there's not, first of all, groundskeeping doesn't have a lot of exposure, you know, unless you're at the big stage. So, and everybody thinks of groundskeeper, you think of groundskeeper Willie, you know, and like, you know, but there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more, you know, science behind it. And that's what's rapidly changed in the last, you know, 20, 25 years of the head groundskeepers that you see now. And all professional sports have degrees in turfgrass science. They're not just inherited groundskeepers from the past, but he was one that took a chance on me to, you know, give me a shot, you know, and sight unseen, you know, just like, phone call, asked him if I could, you know, become, you know, come here and do an internship. I was working on a golf course. I studied turfgrass, wanted to see what it was like at baseball. I love baseball. And when I showed up, I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do. So those people that just give you a chance to try.
We definitely all need advocates to look out for us and kind of bring opportunities for sure.
Yep.
Eve, so we work in baseball. We travel on the team plane. That's exciting. You know, a lot of food on the team plane. and constant food. Yeah. And you have to remember, oh, yeah, hold on a second. I wasn't the one that just burnt 7,000 calories playing baseball because they just constantly bring food. It's like waves of food, and then there's snacks. But, you know, flying on the plane, visiting all these cities, staying in beautiful hotels. So that's what people think about baseball. But what is it really like working in baseball?
It's a lot of work. It's a job. So this is a line from a TED Talk I heard, which is people hear dream job and they're like, oh my God, I want to do that. Well, if you're working your dream job, you know it is a dream come true, but first and foremost, it's a job. And it definitely is what it's like in baseball. The days are long. We can all attest to that. You have to be in the office at you know, a normal time for your department. A lot of people, that's 9. If you're staying really late, you can get in at 10, maybe sometimes 11. And then you're in the office all day, and then the game starts at 7, and then you stay for the game. And then in my case, one of the things I do is I go down and I talk to Brandon Hyatt, our manager, after the game, and we review how the game went, and we see if there's any moves we need to make for the next day. And then you get home at 11, 11:30, and you got to, you know, cool down, get ready for bed, and then do it again the next day. So one of the reasons why baseball is so intense is because we are the sport with the longest season. When you factor in spring training and the playoffs, the season goes from February until October, sometimes November. It's not a lot of downtime. It's not a lot of off season. And there's so many players. There's the major league players who you have to deal with. There's the minor league players who you have to deal with. There's all the coaches. There's the entire front office. There's the scouts. So my day in particular can be different depending on what's going on. Sometimes it's looking at our budgets and talking about what the next few years are going to look like. What are our capital investments going to look like? A lot of times it's going through players, watching video, meeting with our scouts. We sit in a room, we have big debates about players. We look at their statistics, we look at video, we look and see why is this guy struggling. We'll call the coaches to get their opinions. we'll go through PowerPoints about what players are working on and how they're progressing toward their goals. We have debates about whether or not to promote players to new levels of the minors. We'll have last-minute transactions that take place in the majors. That's the exciting stuff that gets all of the attention in the media, calling guys up, signing for agents, making big trades. A lot of that stuff is like sitting around and preparing, and then 99% of it doesn't happen. And so sometimes you just have to prepare yourself for that, for knowing that you're going to put in all this work and all this energy, and then you might do one trade at the trade deadline, or you might do nothing, or you might not get that free agent who you wanted to sign. And then a bunch of it is working with analytics, is working in SQL, working in R, or talking with the analysts in the department who are really, really good at that because they've studied statistics or computer science, and learning, like, what is this model telling me about which pitch we should be throwing in this situation? What is this model telling me about what type of characteristics I want my corner outfielders to have instead of my center fielder? Taking that information, digesting it, and then using it to inform your opinion about a transaction you want to take. So there's a lot that goes on, and just the days are very long, and the season is very long, and you have to drink a lot of coffee to get through it.
Yeah, I own 4 coffee makers in the warehouse, just so you know, various locations, depending on where we're going to be, to make sure it's readily available at all times. So it is, you know, it's a grind for sure. But one thing that is certain is that we love when the baseball games start, because that's a little bit relaxing in many ways. And obviously,
not for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry.
That's when the weather hit.
I mean, I feel good. Why do you think I'm always doing rain dances and have crystals all over?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, there's that. But it is awesome, and we sit and watch the games and cheer, and we're as disappointed as you are. We're as heartbroken as you are with losses with your teams. We feel that. I have the unfortunate burden of reading social media all day and all night, and I get to see all the beautiful comments people make about us personally and also professionally. So it's really wonderful, the world that we're living in. So it is exciting. I want to open it up for questions, but I do want to say one other thing. Kind of keep an eye on our careers, because I'm confident after 162 games of regular season baseball plus 16 to 17 for spring training, when we want to retire, we're going to go work in football. So my dad's dream will come true after all. Anyway, please, go ahead.
Nicole,
where are you from, by the way, and your name?
What?
Where are you from and what's your name?
Mark Cantor, originally from Bristol, Pennsylvania, right near Trenton, but now we live in Portsmouth, Rhode Island, right near Newport.
Nice.
Welcome.
Very nice.
Nicole, so you worked in Trenton, and I know that's right on the Delaware, and I know you had floods there. Can you explain how you deal with floods and all that in dealing with the grounds there?
Yeah, well, my first year, actually, that was a whopper. We had a flood. The Trenton ballpark is situated right on the Delaware River, and it was one of those, like, you know, 100-year floods happened. Well, it was a natural soil field. Ours at Camden Yards is 100% sand underneath, so we can drain 16 inches of rain within an hour. At Trenton, it was like the soil like you have in your backyard. So when the flood occurred, I mean, there was water that was pooled all over the outfield. It never made it to the infield, but it was the outfield. So bad that, like, the team didn't want to take the field to risk any injury. I mean, we had these, you know, Robinson Cano played there when I was there. So, like, these up-and-coming Yankee players, Brett Gardner, who I don't know if he's still playing, but he was there. I feel like I've been with him forever. But so we had these big name players on the Yankee from the Yankees farm system that just would not want to take the field to get out there. So that we lost, I think, 7 games due to drainage issues. And I was able to convince the front office and you know, corporate sponsor or everything, you know, business wise, that they needed a new field to be able to handle these kinds of floods. So great question. That was something I was not prepared for, but we got through it.
I'm going to toggle back and forth.
Yeah.
Please go ahead, your name and where you're from.
Hi, Bob Lemoyne from New Hampshire. I teach a sports and society class at the high school level, and usually any girls in that class are there because they took too long to sign up for classes, so they're stuck with me. And I love the inspiration of Nicole talking about how earth science can get you into sports.
Yeah.
You just mentioned data. You mentioned, I'm curious about how other sports are as connected to baseball. Are they more opportunities than other sports? Is MLB behind or are they ahead of the game? And what would you say to a class like mine where I try to connect to see sports? You don't have to be a fan. You can see this as a career opportunity and get into something like that.
I'm gonna take that one quickly. I think that it's similar to with people who want to pursue a professional career on the field as a player. We would prefer to say there's many opportunities. It's not just on the field. Whether it's there are so many departments at the Orioles, whether it is ticketing, it is groundskeeping, it is all of the social content creation, all those videos you guys see, corporate partnerships, community development, foundation. There's just so many opportunities, human resources, accounting, that it's really depends on what you're interested in. But I think the first thing is not believing that you can't do it. There's literally a job for everybody in sports. As far as whether other leagues are ahead or behind of Major League Baseball, I can't really speak to other leagues. I do think that there's a long way to go across all sports for women, whether it's pay equity or what have you. But we also know that's tied to revenue as well. And that's one of the reasons why we're not going to wait at the Orioles for Major League Baseball or really anybody. We're going to create those pipelines right here in our community in Baltimore and across the Mid-Atlantic region so that we can develop those people that are going to sit in our chairs one day. That's very, very important to us. And we're going to invest at the educational level. We're going to invest at the internship level. And then we're going to have jobs waiting for those people. So that's what we're getting ready to announce. And it's going to be a very large partnership with a number of agencies that are going to help us do that. So I would say to your students, we'd love to talk to them, but they can certainly make their way here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, as long as they don't wear Red Sox gear. That is my husband.
This year, don't worry about it.
I know. But we'll see them at the Little League Classic on Sunday. So, all right. Your name and where you're from.
Victoria Lovinggood. I am from Salina, Texas, but I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. So
awesome.
New Texas transplant. I am mid-career in my journey because I've been doing insurance for over 20 years, so risk management has really become an interest to me. And you had mentioned, you know, injuries on the field and making sure that turf is adequate and things like that. And I was just curious about, is risk management done at a team level? Is it done at the majors level? Does everyone kind of have a different place on how they do it? And what kind of advice would you give to someone who is in their mid-career that may be looking to make a change and get into baseball?
Lisa, do you want to take that one?
Sure. Currently, risk management is handled by several different departments. In the Human Resource Department, we do the workers' compensation piece. We are currently looking to hire a risk manager so that they could work with both HR, with ballpark operations, and just help us, you know, and the finance department definitely, you know, with some of the insurance renewals and those types of things. But if we've just seen over probably the last 10 years that clubs are bringing on someone to handle risk.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Please.
Yeah, hi, Tom Stone from Rochester, New York. My question is, across all three of your areas, how different, even in particular, you gave us a little bit of sort of the day in the life of the hours you work and how long it is, but during the off season, what are the differences? Like what gets focused on? I would assume it's most different for Nicole during the off season because you don't have games, but I'm sure you're still working. I'm sure all three of you also save up your PTO and vacation time and mostly take that during the off season, but I'm just curious, it's kind of like teachers during the summer. You're still working and prepping for the new school year, but I'm just curious, what are the differences in each of your roles?
Well, for me, as soon as the season ends, and that's, you know, basically around the end of October, we get right into prepping the field for the next spring. So for the rest of the growing season, which is from September through the mid-end December, I mean, it's been a little bit warmer in December here, so we can still actually work. We'll focus on getting everything reshaped, relaid, overseeded, you know, resodded, any kind of thing that you can do to get ready for that play that could potentially start in March. So that's really a lot of work that goes into it after our season. January, like you said, is really your only chance to take your PTO. And then February, you're trying to work on your budget, get equipment back in shape, hire a whole new crew, which is a lot. And then March 1st, we're right there back on the field getting ready for our season to start.
Eve, do you want to add?
Yeah. The off season is mostly different because you don't have games, so you don't have to be at the ballpark as late. Now, that said, the off season is still super, super busy because the way that the schedule works is if you're in the playoffs, you're playing through October. If you're not in the playoffs, then your season ends right around October 1st. And then starting 5 days after the World Series is when the off season calendar really takes off. So you have all these decisions you need to make about retaining your free agents. You have to decide by December 2nd whether or not you want to tender your players for next year. The GM meetings will you generally be the first or second week in November, and then you have Thanksgiving, and then the first or second week in December you have your winter meetings, and in winter meetings you get all the teams together and you're talking to agents about free agents who you want to sign, and you can talk to other teams about wanting to do trades. And then you have to go back to your offices and you're starting to talk about what our coaching staff's going to look like for next year. And you're constantly looking for minor league free agents or major league free agents to sign. And you're constantly on the phone with other teams talking about deals. And then the 1 week you really get off is between Christmas and New Year's. And then you get back in January. And then there's a push to start getting ready for spring training. What's the schedule going to look like? When are the players getting down there? Who's healthy? Who's not healthy? Who's recovering from their surgery in the off season, and then pitchers and catchers usually report right around Valentine's Day. So it is quite busy still.
Yeah, it's a January also mini camp sometimes in Sarasota as well. So it's and also we're building a state-of-the-art academy in the Dominican Republic currently. We broke ground on that last October, and we expect that to be open hopefully about a year from now. It's a little behind. But some of us will travel to the Dominican and see that. But we have one more question right over here.
Hi, Perry Barber. And I've been umpiring for 40 years, so I want to thank all of you for breaking ground in your arenas. You are the examples that, as you say, the people, but a lot of them will be girls who will be coming after you and filling the spots that you now fill so capably. And I just want to add that, men, you see how wonderful these women are, how hardworking and capable and really excellent and good at their jobs, and how they're making baseball better. They are not ruining it. They are not demasculinizing it. They are not feminizing it beyond recognition. Do not fear the estrogen.
Okay, one more. This is really the last one, though. I don't want to get in trouble with Scott.
Hi, my name is Scott Nathanson, and I'm on the board of Arlington Senior Babe Ruth Baseball in Virginia. And for several years, I ran Bethesda Chevy Chase's main rival, or one of the main rivals, Arlington Senators Baseball. Last year, and probably the thing I'm most proud of during my tenure there, was I joined with Jennifer Hammond and DC Girls Baseball, and we fielded the first all-girls travel team in the history of Northern Virginia travel baseball.
Awesome.
So, enough tooting my own horn. What I really want to know from y'all is how you see the on-the-field opportunities for girls connect with the off-the-field opportunities that you are doing. The Kelsey Whitmores, as well with the Staten Island Fairy Hawks, and the Rachel Balovich with the Yankees, and how you see those interplaying and how you see Major League Baseball being part of that. Thank you.
Who wants to take that? All right.
I can talk about that. Yeah, so definitely there will be more opportunities for women on the field in coaching roles. And we've started to see that where there's a lot of women now in athletic training roles and then strength and conditioning. Rachel actually started off in strength and conditioning and then moving up into the coaching ranks. And Alyssa Nakin, who is a major league coach with the San Francisco Giants, has an on-field role. And I think it's been very well documented in research studies throughout the years that when you have more women in charge on your senior leadership team or on your board or just in positions who can make hiring decisions, then they're more likely to hire other women. So as there are people like us who continue to climb the ranks, it's statistically more likely that you're going to see more women hired throughout the entire organization, which includes in the on-field roles. There are women scouts as well. I was a scout. And I think that we have to acknowledge that change is slow. So it's not like we're going to wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden every single major league team is going to have a female scout and a female coach. But if you accept that change is slow and it's very gradual and that each person who gets in opens the door for someone behind her, more and more you will see more women get opportunities.
Thank you so much. I want to ask one quick favor since you guys are going to the game tonight. If you're not a Red Sox fan, if you could please just be an Orioles fan for tonight. And when we're doing the national anthem and you sing O, thank you for coming to our city. Thank you for visiting. Appreciate it. And thank you for, guys, everything you're doing for baseball. Thank you.
Thank you.